Hi, this is Kim Catola. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Cradle My Heart Radio. You can hear the show live on Sundays at 9 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock Central, and there are many more podcasts for this and all of our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thank you for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
This is Cradle My Heart Radio with your host, Kim Catola. Cradle My Heart Radio, preventing abortion and helping those it hurts. And now, Kim Catola and Cradle My Heart Radio.
This is Cradle My Heart Radio, Kim Catola with you, and I'm so glad to be able to jump right into a conversation with our guests this time out. Al and Lisa Robertson of Duck Dynasty fame have a new book out called A New Season, and they, I think, sacrificially share the story of some of the most troubled times in their marriage in order to be able to help the rest of us with the things that we struggle with as married people, too. And so let's welcome from Duck Dynasty, Al and Lisa Robertson. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Kim. Thanks for having us on.
Great to be here.
So, Al, I know that your time is a little bit shorter today, and so we'll give you a chance to start first. In talking about this book, you really open up in some ways that I understand you and Lisa have been doing in years past in ministry settings, in church settings, helping people with marriage retreats. But this is a book that's out there for everyone to read outside of the safety of the walls of the church. Tell me about going public with some of these really painful chapters in your marriage.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Kim, because when I was talking to Glenn Beck, he said his word was, "Al, you are a real dirtbag." And I was like, "Well, thanks a lot, Glenn." And he said, "Well, wait a minute, I'm a dirtbag too." I said, "Well, I guess that's true." But, you know, yeah, it's not easy to talk about your failures, to talk about your weaknesses, you know, and the things that you're ashamed of in your own life. And certainly I have those. But at the same time, you know, I mean, I'm a Bible man. You know, I've been a pastor for 22 years before I, you know, went back and started appearing on the show. And, you know, when I read the Bible, I read about flawed people who God was not ashamed of them and yet allowed their stories to be told. And so, which is, by the way, is another great apologetic for the Bible itself, because trust me, the heroes in there, except for Jesus himself, I mean, there's a lot of mistakes, you know, and it's very open. So that's the way I feel about myself. I mean, you know, I'm just being transparent, honest. It was the way I grew up. It's the way my folks were and are. And so it was natural for me to want to talk about those things because, you know, once I found healing in my own personal life and then Lisa and I in our marriage, I wanted other people to know that and to know how to find it.
So give us just the rough outline of the type of dirtbag you were, Al, just so we know where
now,
God had to go to bring you back.
That's on my tombstone now, Kim, Al the dirtbag. you know, basically, I was a decent kid. You know, I grew up in a non-Christian home because, you know, Dad didn't, and Mom both, they didn't convert until I was about 9 or 10 years old. So I grew up seeing a lot of things that kids shouldn't see because, you know, Dad ran a bar and, you know, so there's all kind of things that happen in around that. And so, but at the same time, I was, you know, a preacher lived up the street from us and he took me to church. And so in spite of all that, you know, I had an exposure to things that were good. And so I was the oldest, Dad wasn't there. So I took care of my brothers and, always kind of had that role in my life. And then it seemed like once we kind of got it all together as a family, maybe I didn't have that responsibility anymore because now Mom and Dad had it going great and my brothers are getting bigger and our lives are good. We're involved in a great church. And I just, you know, went off the rails for whatever reason when I was a teenager. And so from about 14 to 18, those were kind of my prodigal years. And some of that obviously was done in secret here, living here in West Monroe and hiding. And then when I got to be 17 and graduated, I left, went to New Orleans. I broke Lisa's heart. Unfortunately for her, our interaction and our paths crossed when I was in this period of my life. so, you know, I just kind of heaped on, you know, some problems that she already had in her life. And so that's the part when I look back on it that I'm probably the most, you know, ashamed of, is the sense that I had an opportunity to be a leader for us that I just wasn't in the beginning. And so, you know, it's kind of like the tail wagging the dog after that. So we had a lot of issues because of that. So unfortunately for me, I got it by the time I was, you know, 18 and 19 years old. I'd done enough to where I realized I don't want to live this way. And mom and dad were very supportive. Just like a prodigal in Luke 15, I returned home, and my life changed from that point forward. So from that point to today, still a lot of mistakes. I'm not perfect, but I've been serving Christ ever since.
So, Lisa, you two got together really young.
Yeah, I was only 15, and he was 16 whenever we first met, or not when we met, but whenever we officially met as a couple.
And so today, where you are now, you two have kind of defied the odds, I think, with everything that's happened between the two of you.
Yeah, we actually have. I mean, you know, because they talk about, you know, young love and all of that. I really kind of fell in love with Alan whenever I was in the sixth grade. It was the first time that I saw him. And so at that point, he was kind of like my knight in shining armor. And, you know, then whenever I was 15, we started dating. And, of course, he's the one that I lost my virginity to. And then he broke my heart and left and went on his prodigal journey. And I just kind of, you know, went crazy, so to speak. You know, just kind of lost my head. But, you know, then whenever he came back, we were married at 18 and 19. And, you know, a lot of people do say that those marriages hardly ever work. They just, you know, whenever you're that young, you don't know what you want, and why would anybody get married that young? So we kind of have defied the odds, but so has everybody else in our family, because everybody has gotten married younger, you know.
Well, and maybe the odds are the problem here.
I have an opinion on that, Kim. I mean, I yes. You know, because culturally you go back, you know, in time, and people got married younger, and then there's periods of time where they get married later. It's always about commitment. It's always about making those decisions. Of course, you know, a lot of times when people are teenagers, they'll make impulsive decisions. Sometimes it's maybe because a pregnancy is involved or something like that. So there's a lot of reasons why people don't stay together. But it's like anything else. I mean, whether you wait or don't wait, you know, or older or not older, everybody's going to make bad decisions and do things. And so, it's just work, and it's just a decision to try to work through things, even when bad things happen. So, you know, we grew up together, Lisa and I did, literally, and each other is all we've ever known. And, you know, that had some problematic years and difficulties, but then there's a lot of good things about it, too. I mean, she's been my best friend for a very long time. And that part has been a blessing. So it's not, even though in the book we deal with everything, there's a lot of good in there too. So we almost call it the good, the bad, and the ugly, but because they're all three in the book.
Well, that's every marriage, though, and I think that's the problem, is we have some illusion that our marriage is the only one that has the ugly parts or, you know, the weaker parts. And that's why I appreciate this new book so much. It's titled A New Season, and it's by Al and Lisa Robertson. Al Robertson, is the oldest son of the Duck Commander, and if somehow you have managed to not see Duck Dynasty, you'll need to know that Al grew up hunting and fishing, and he helped build the foundation of the family business in the 70s and 80s, which is duck calls. And so back in the day, he and Phil would travel around Louisiana and Arkansas selling duck calls to stores right out of their truck. And the sales pitch then was the same as it is today. Al, how did you sell those duck calls?
We told people that this call sounds the most like a duck than any other call. And it does. And it still does to this day. In fact, in the early days, Dad had this friend that was in the FBI, and so they got this listening deal, and they taped ducks, and then they taped our duck calls, and had this, you know, this, we were putting the science behind it, you know, and so we could say, hey, if this thing has been, you know, approved by the FBI, that it really is the most like a duck. So
that's,
it's
awesome.
Kind of funny looking back, you know, what we did to really just, we were like gypsies, you know, we literally traveled around and sold product, you know, like instead of a wagon, it was out of our pickup truck. to try to get it off the ground. So, but you know, we learned a lot of humility, Kim. I mean, we also commercial fished the Washita River when I was a teenager and into my college years, and my brothers did the same. They were a part of that as well. And so, you know, we feel like God was preparing us, you know, because we didn't have a lot of money. I mean, that's how we ate. That's how we fed our families. And even when Lisa and I got married, you know, we didn't make much money because we were trying to get the business off the ground. So it took a long time for it to become the success it is today. And obviously, it's even bigger than just duck calls now.
Mm. And you had, of course, a full-time ministry calling that you fulfilled for more than 25 years, but now you are back in the family commitment, spreading that the gospel of Christ through the love of hunting and the great outdoors. And Lisa, you know, when you talked about there's a central story in your story that I want to focus on just a little bit today, and that's the fact that, you know, you've been very open about the fact that you had an abortion in your teens. Tell us just briefly the circumstances around that decision and what happened to you.
Well, that was about maybe close to a year after Alan had left, and I had really dated a lot of guys and actually been intimate with a lot of guys. But this particular one was his family was some of our friends, and so we started dating. He was a lot older than I was, but you know, I was looking for what I had lost with Alan. And so of course sex was included in that. I mean, that was just that in my mind back then, that was just part of it, you know. And so at, you know, I was probably 2 months from turning 17 years old, and, you know, you kind of think that you're pregnant, but you just say, no, it couldn't be. No, it's not. But, you know, whenever I started having morning sickness, then I knew that, that something was up, and I couldn't, deny it anymore. So I went to the doctor and it was true. And so, you know, I talked with my family, and we decided that, you know, the best thing for me to do, you know, for my life is for me to have an abortion. You know, what would people think about me? What was my reputation? My thinking at that point was, if I have a child and Alan ever does come back, you know, then he's not going to want me, because I'm stained. I have somebody else's child. And so, and also, I mean, you know, at 16 years old, I really did not understand that, you know, that life started at conception. And I just do not believe that had I looked at an ultrasound, had I, you know, been able to hear the heartbeat, all of those things, I don't know that I would have chose what I chose, but I also did not seek out the help to find that, you know. They had pregnancy centers here then, too. Now, they weren't as open as they are now, but so, you know, maybe I would have, maybe I wouldn't have. At, you know, at 49 years old, I'm thinking, if you hear that heartbeat, how do you do that? But I did, you know, I went in and had the abortion one day, and the next day that was it. I mean, I couldn't talk to this person. I couldn't be around this person. It was over, you know. My feelings for him was over. Everything was just, at that point, everything was dead, and probably because I was dead inside too.
Well, you know, so you've been in the media since the book has been released, and you've done some interviews, some that have gone better than others, we could characterize that. But tell me, what's your motivation in wanting to share that chapter of your life at this point now, all these years later?
Well, I know that there's a lot of people out there, Kim, that's done the same thing that I've done. And I know there are still people, you know, even if it's 25, 30 years ago, that still struggle with their decision to do that. And I know they still feel as though, you know, they can never be forgiven of that. And I want people to know that there's hope and healing through Jesus Christ, no matter what your sin is. Now, this is a bad sin, because to me, I murdered my child. So I don't, you know, in my mind, I'm thinking you can't get any worse than that. But you know, Jesus Christ died on the cross for all of our sins. You know, not just the ones that lie, not just the ones that cheat, but the ones who also murder their children. And so that is the hope and healing that I want other people to know, is that, you know, even if it would have been me, I still believe that Jesus Christ would have died on the cross just for my sin. But he died for everybody's sin. And I want all the women out there to know that you can find that hope and that healing through Jesus Christ, and that he can heal that aching and that hurt that is so deep down into your soul that you feel like you'll never be able to get over.
And I think another thing was Lisa wants, both of us want, you know, young girls who are maybe in that position to have the perspective of someone, you know, 30 plus years later. And, you know, maybe because that person at 16 can't see that, but like Lisa said, at 49 she does. And so, you know, to speak to that and to do that through this book, so maybe someone who's read that can go talk to their daughter or their granddaughter or, you know, their friend, you know, to not make that decision, because you will regret it later, that life is gone now. So that's another, so it's cautionary as well as healing, both.
Sure.
And no matter
sure.
what people will tell you, because I know I had nurses tell me that day that I had the abortion, look, this will be over and you'll never think about it again. And Kim, I would dare say that there is a couple of days that pass that I do not think about it. It is something, even to this day, that I still think about. Now, I'm not shamed by it anymore. I'm not, you know, it's not a hurting down deep in my soul. It's a longing to meet this child, because when I get to heaven, I want to meet this child. But, you know, you will think about it. I want girls to know this is not the end. Just because you do that, it is not the end. You will think about it every day of your life. And whenever you have kids and grandkids, you will long for that life, and you will long to know that person, you know, that you gave up.
Well, I appreciate both of you, first of all, with the message on prevention and the message on healing, because that's what this program is all about. And I understand the purity of your motive. And when we continue to the second segment of our broadcast, we're going to talk about the reaction to that message. But Al, before we get to that, I want to ask you, as the person who was who loved Lisa, who left to sow your wild oats, or however we want to characterize that, and then you came back, how did you process this knowledge of what had occurred?
You know, again, I think being younger, I didn't really understand the depth of it either. You know, at 18, Lisa did tell me about what had happened, as well as once we got married, about, you know, being sexually abused by a family member. And I don't know if, you know, now, I think as an older man, I think I would take the gravity of that much heavier than I did at the time. You know, when you're younger, you tend to sort of just compartmentalize, I guess, and children do it even more than teenagers. But, you know, I don't think I ever really grasped the gravity of it and the effect of it. I didn't necessarily, because I had been so bad and a part of so many things, I didn't judge Lisa about it in terms of thinking she's worse than me. Because, you know, I just felt like I was the dirtbag already. So I didn't have a problem with it that way. But, you know, looking back on it now, I think if I would have had, you know, a better insight to maybe us getting some help from a good Christian counselor or somebody that could have helped us sort of realize that, you know, these things, they're not just over because they're, you know, they happened. They still have an impact on you into the future of your life and your relationship and your own intimacy. So, you know, I wish I had known that more, which is another reason why I wrote this book. You know, everything is about a revelation, so that hopefully somebody will learn from you. You know, someone once said that experience is the best teacher, but I feel like someone else's experience is the best teacher, because then, you know, you can learn from someone else's pain, which is an advantage of having to go through it yourself.
Sure. Well, and so as you talk about how it resonated through the relationship and how you might have benefited from some counseling, do you think that there was a connection to the infidelity that occurred? And what can you share with us for those who might be in a season of infidelity and have an abortion in the past. What's the connection there? I mean,
you know, Lisa and I have spent a lot of time talking about that, both with our counselor years ago and just, you know, now as we counsel other people and help them. I definitely think there's some, you know, like Lisa says, it's not an excuse for bad behavior, but there are reasons for bad behavior. And a lot of that does come from things like this. Lisa had a skewered version of intimacy and what her purpose was, especially not understanding, you know, that she had not really embraced Christ. And so, you know, she thought, you know, it was to please me was part of it. But any man, because of both of what had happened to her early in her life and then also just some rejections and things like that from the abortion. So I think they're definitely tied in. I think, you know, people are exposed to things or they do things and they think, you know, it's not going to impact them, but it does. And so, you know, part of that process is not just talking about it, but it's also finding healing in each and every one of those circumstances. And that's part of what we learned through our counselor was, you know, that we needed healing from each and every one of those traumatic things in our lives. And we experienced that. And then, you know, the growth that we've experienced since that point and even in the talking about it now, there's sort of a real, you know, cathartic time that comes about when you share and you see other people. Just today, a guy that built our house, a good friend of ours, he walked up and he said, you know, I went to the movies last night. Every time I go to the movies, I remember the time that you took me and my wife to see Fireproof and what a mess we were. And now we're doing so great. And we owe so much to you guys. Well, I mean, you know, Lisa and I look at each other and, you know, you tear up because you realize that because you're willing to invest and help other people because of what you've experienced, that helps your own life heal as well.
I know there's not a silver bullet, but do you think being able to view your past through a lens of trauma is one of the keys to being able to overcome? It seems like that's a thread that I'm hearing in your revelation.
Yeah, I think so. And I think being honest about it and upfront, which is not always easy in a pastoral situation. A lot of times pastors and pastors' wives feel like they can't really be transparent because, you know, what are people going to think and how can we lead if they think, you know, we're in the same boat that they're in. But I just think those are mistakes. I think that's the evil one that convinces you that sort of secrecy and privacy is the word we'll use, you know, that sounds better. But it's nothing is private. I mean, people make mistakes. They need the healing power of Christ. And Lisa and I have both found that the more transparent we are about it, the book or any other way, the more respect we get, not less.
And Kim, I think most people who go down this path and most people who have some really, really dark secrets that they're not willing to tell, you know, I think there's so much trauma out there that we don't know about. You know, they always say that, you know, it's I don't remember what the latest numbers is, but, you know, like 60% of people are abused. Kim, I think those numbers are a lot higher than that because, you know, whenever we do book signings and stuff, I mean, every other woman that comes up to me is just boo-hooing and has either been abused or has had an abortion. And I think just so many times that the trauma that we suffer does something to our reasoning whenever we decide to make choices. And we can never get those good choices out there because everything is skewered by what happened to us, by that trauma. And so, you know, whenever we go to make a choice, and we want to make a good choice or we want to make a godly choice, we end up making the wrong choice because we're just not sure what the right choice is. I mean, really, so what's the right choice for me? I mean, I'm a terrible person. I've done this, this, and this. So, you know, if I did this, then it's not a big deal. But we don't realize that every choice we make, you know, just feeds on the next one and then feeds on the next one, and it just... It really does make our whole life a life of trauma from what happened to us in our early years.
But praise God, as Al said, between the Word of God and the people of God, healing is available to us. And you have both laid out the path for us, whether it would be, yes, sometimes it's time to go for counseling. Sometimes it's prayer. Sometimes, as Al said, it's making a commitment, making a decision, even in our immaturity, that we're going to stay. And we're going to work it out. And, boy, I really appreciate you opening your hearts to us. You're listening to Cradle My Heart Radio, and we're coming down to the end of our time with Al and Lisa Robertson of Duck Dynasty for this segment. And, Al, we're going to bid you adieu, and then we'll be able to continue with a second part with Lisa. But thank you so much, and I wish you every success with the new book, A New Season. Al, thank you for being with us on Cradle My Heart Radio.
Appreciate it. I'm going to try to make some funny TV show with my crazy bearded brethren.
Excellent. Outstanding. Thank you so much for being with us. And we'll continue the story next week. Stay with us here on Faith Radio. We'll open the phones for your calls as we discuss the news of the week, helping prevent abortion and helping those it hurts here on Cradle My Heart Radio.
With others, finding God's love after abortion.
This is Cradle My Heart Radio.
Cradle My Heart with Kim Cotola. Join the conversation. Call toll-free 800-811-3003. 800-811-3003.
So glad that you could be with us tonight. Thank you so much for making Cradle My Heart Radio your selection for your Sunday listening. I know that there are a lot of things that compete for our time and attention. And sometimes it's not even feasible to tune in when we are live here on Faith Radio. But you can always go to cradlemyheart.org and look for the podcast replay, because we will get that to you just as soon as we get the audio processed. And that's a big part of what we do each week. And if you're just joining us, you missed a great conversation with Al and Lisa Robertson of Duck Dynasty. They've been very candid in talking about an abortion in Lisa's past and about infidelity. And they helped us connect the dots between a past abortion and infidelity, especially on the part of the wife. Go to cradlemyheart.org, listen for that first half, and then we'll continue that interview in next week's broadcast as well. They have a book called A New Season, and as Lisa has been on the media tour for that book, she was handled, I think, very unfairly by a media outlet that we covered it again at cradlemyheart.org, and there's a link to the interview that I'm referring to. And the reporter basically painted her into a corner and said, "But aren't you in favor of women having the right to choose?" And this after she had shared the anguish of what that experience was for her. And it's just so unfortunate when that happens. You know, I had an experience like that when I first started speaking out about my abortion experience. And at that time in my life, I had 25 years as a media professional. And yet I also was drawn into a conversation that, again, made me feel as if I had to answer a question a certain way for the benefit of the reporter. It's a really tough thing to go public with your story, motivated by wanting to help others spiritually. And having a person ask you a question about it who is not spiritually minded and is probably not a Christian, you're just not speaking the same language. When you and I say that God says choose life, if we are followers of Christ, we know that that statement in Deuteronomy 30 comes after two chapters of the Lord laying it out that if you choose the way that I say you should choose, you will be blessed. If you choose something else, you will be cursing yourself. And then at the climax, the culmination of that teaching, God says, now choose life that you and your children may live. If somebody doesn't understand and spiritually discern what God is saying with this about the benefits of being in his care and doing life his way, and we just say, well, God gives you free will. Oh, my gosh, I've had that conversation with so many people. Well, God gives you free will, so it's not for you to judge somebody's choice, as though there's no moral value attached to our choices, which is ludicrous. Why would we even have that conversation if we weren't talking about something as controversial as abortion? You know, if I say if I choose to drink and go drive, well, that's my choice. You know, it's so silly. It's so silly. Some of the logical dead ends that we find ourselves in. But I hope that you will, again, tune in for the next part of the interview next week, because I'll talk that over with Lisa Robertson and also maybe arm you for some of the conversations that you have on a weekly basis with the people in your circle. Our phones are open right now at 800-811-3003. If you have a reaction to the interview, maybe it was surprising to you. Maybe you're a big fan of Duck Dynasty. Maybe you are so well aware of the fact that Al, as a former pastor, would be able to bring the gospel as sweetly as he did in the conversation. 800-811-3003 is our number. We'd love to have you join us. And I want to talk also now about something that's been in the news this week. And I first saw it on social media, but it's been in, I think it was linked at Woman's Day, and Patheos blog had one of their bloggers writing about this new pro-abortion book for children. You cannot make this stuff up. It's a pro-abortion book for children. My Sister is a Happy Ghost is the sort of the theme of the book. And I think it's called Sister Ghosts, Sister Apple, Sister Pig by Mary Walling Blackburn. Focuses on the adult topic of abortion, not only to explain to children what it is, but to advocate for it. Did you see this news this week? What do you think? 1-800-811-3003. We've got that linked at facebook.com/cradlemyheart if you didn't see the article, if you want to go and take a look at it while we're discussing this. In the book, a 3-year-old named Lee defends the abortion of his sister. And the story follows Lee as he or she, as the author stressed, it's an androgynous name, searches for a sister who might be an apple, a pig, or somewhere in a tree. And Lee later decides Sister's a happy ghost and explicitly says that he's glad that Sister isn't around to inconvenience his parents. There's a free ebook available for this book because they want it in everybody's hands. The Blaze reporting on that. The author, Walling Blackburn, is assistant professor of art at Southern Methodist University's Meadows School of the Arts. And Lee is Papa and Mama's only child for now, although there was once a sister, the book began. Where does Sister live now? At one point, Lee explained to his Papa, well, she used to live in Mama and doesn't anymore. And after Papa agreed, Lee reiterated, she lived before me, but Mama couldn't keep her. Mama says she's a ghost. So when Lee's papa asked, does that make you sad or scared? Lee changed his tune. He said, I'm not sad. My sister's a ghost. If you kept my sister, you'd be tired and sad and mad. And so when father asks why in the book, Lee continues, because we'd be wild and loud and sometimes we would fight. Mama might be scared that she couldn't buy enough food for us. Mama might not have enough time to read to me, to paint with me, to play with me, to talk with me. And Papa also noted good reasons, quote unquote. Lee doesn't have a sister right here, right now. Maybe you'll have another sister when there's more time and more money, Papa said. But even during story time, Lee couldn't forget about his lost sibling. He whispered his secret to his uncle. The secret is she's a ghost. Lee and his uncle pretend she's still there. The ghost girl can sit beside me, his uncle offered. And later, Lee told his uncle, Mama had an abortion before she had me, but reassures his uncle that sister's a happy ghost. What do you think of this? It's meant to be a provocation. In her acknowledgments, Walling Blackburn thanked her own ghost sister and warned, masochists look elsewhere because between these pages you'll not find the luxury of grief, culpability's sharp sting, or salty guilt. And she said, if it upsets pro-lifers, that's just a bonus. 800-811-3003. You know, with great regularity, I won't say every week, but with great regularity, I hear from people who say, I haven't told my children about my abortion, and they're grown now, and I feel I need to have a conversation, and I'm not sure where to begin. The idea that someone would flippantly be telling a child, well, it's good for you that I had an abortion because your sister ghost would be making me mad if she was wild with you. And there's more money for you. Now we can have a big screen TV. I mean, the idea that a parent would speak to a child on those terms is so outside the realm of what a nurturing and caring parent would actually say to a child, particularly a young child. 800-811-3003 is our number. I would just love to hear your reaction on this. When we had a couple on who had an abortion together, they had plans to marry, and he had joined the military, and Chuck and Linda Raymond is their name, and you can go and find the podcast at cradlemyheart.org. Chuck and Linda Raymond told their story about how they were engaged to be married, and he was going off to, West Point, and they slipped and had sex one time, and she got pregnant. And they were terrified that he was going to lose his commission and they were going to ruin their reputations, and so they chose abortion. And we had a listener toward the end of the program email in a question about how did you talk with your kids, because the Raymonds beat the statistics and continued as a couple, and they married and they had children, and they still had to go through the healing and grieving process of aborting that first pregnancy. Many, many couples will not survive that process. And off the air, the Raymond shared with me, and they gave me permission to talk about it, but, you know, something that was, I think, very similar to what happened in our family. The kids have different reactions because they're all individuals, but some of the children don't take the news well at all. Some are deeply personally impacted by the knowledge that a sibling or a step-sibling or a half-sibling, I should say, was aborted, or even a step-sibling, not related by blood. Some are deeply troubled by learning that news. It's been characterized by Philip Ney and others who are mental health professionals as an existential guilt. In other words, even a young teenager can form the question, if you aborted that child, why did you allow me to live? Why did you not abort me? And if the child can't come up with a good answer for that, full-blown survivor guilt can happen, and all sorts of problems can result in the wake. So the idea that a child would just take it in stride and say, well, I got mine, Mommy not mad because I don't have to be wild with a sibling, and I can have all the things that Mom can buy for me now, so I got mine, so that abortion was a net good in my life, is so offensively ludicrous that you just want to dismiss it out of hand. But there it is. So what do you think? 800-811-3003 is our number. I'm Kim Cotola, and you're listening to Cradle My Heart Radio. We're talking about this book, which has been released now, called Sister Apple, Sister Pig by Mary Walling Blackburn. And when we continue, we'll take your calls, but we'll also talk about what is the recommended way to share the news of an abortion in your family's past with the children who may or may not need to hear that news just now. Join us, 800-811-3003, here at Cradle My Heart Radio.
A safe place to connect with others. Finding God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cotola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003. Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cotola. Call toll free at 800-811-3003.
Thanks for being with us tonight, and we do seek to prevent abortion and help those it hurts. And yes, I believe that those it hurts include the family members who come in the wake of an abortion, because if a woman has aborted a pregnancy and has not dealt with it, I believe that it can't help but impact her parenting of subsequent children. She may become overprotective. She may become distanced. The overprotection, I think, results from not being willing to risk harming a child. There can be distancing for that same reason, failure to bond for that same reason. I believe parenting is always impacted by an abortion in the past. And so what can we do, and who should we talk to and when if there is an abortion in our family tree? If you've gone through this, I'd love to hear your thoughts at 800-811-3003. I know many of our regular listeners have had that conversation with their children, and I would love to give you a chance to share how that worked out for you, what drove your decision, how things went, what sort of counsel you received. 800-811-3003. The Elliott Institute at afterabortion.org has a great guideline, and we've also written about this at cradlemyheart.org. Linda Cochran has written a very lengthy article we've got linked there. Just in the search feature, go to talking to kids about abortion. But, you know, because it's often such a secret, many of our other family members may not know. So even parents who may feel comfortable sharing their story with other adults will hesitate when it comes to telling their children. They worry about fracturing their relationship with the children, especially young children, tend to see mom and dad in, of course, nurturing and protecting roles. Many parents fear even their adult children will react to news of a past abortion with condemnation or disgust. So the parents' questions and concerns are many. What if my child hates me? What if they don't forgive me? What if they're frightened? What should I share? And so there are three pretty guiding principles, I think, reasons for choosing to talk about a past abortion. Number one would be if it's publicly known, if you shared your testimony even in a somewhat private setting at a church or a small group gathering, and there's any possibility that the news will circle back to the family without you being the person to deliver that news. If you feel called to begin speaking publicly about abortion, or if there's another reason to believe the child may find out about it from another source, it's best at that time to sit down with that child, regardless of their age, and try to have an age-appropriate conversation. Secondly, if the parents suspect that the child is already aware or has guessed that an abortion took place in the family, for example, if the children were born before the abortion, may have guessed that the mother was pregnant. In other words, if it was a younger sibling. And third, if the abortion has resulted in serious consequences for the parents, such as a severe depression, substance abuse, divorce, violence in the home, if you can trace that back to the abortion, some parents feel that telling the child will be a step toward healing the wounds within the family. And it may be that the child will say, oh, all right, well, now this does make sense. It isn't just, you know, difficult random things happen to our family. But even if you go forward with this decision to talk with your children, there are some very key points to remember. And again, I would like to hear from you about this book that we were discussing, Sister Apple, Sister Pig, which is a book that's advocating a pro-abortion worldview being taught to children, that my sister's a ghost. I have a sister ghost that mom aborted because life is better for me as a result. That's the message of this book for a child. I would love to hear your thoughts about that as we continue about the proper way, I think, to talk with kids about abortion. 800-811-3003 if you want to weigh in. So here are the things that the Elliott Institute says are key points to remember to have a healthy conversation with your child. Make sure you have worked through your own grief process first. The Bible tells us in James that if we confess to one another, we are healed. It's very healing to share the truth with someone one-on-one, but that is not your child. Parents need to be far enough along in their own healing to be able to cope with their children's emotional reactions. And the same is true for anyone that you're considering telling, whether it's your parents that you withheld the knowledge from until a later date. You want to be available emotionally. You do not want to be sharing this with a family member so that they can take care of you. I'm not saying you shouldn't get your needs taken care of, but with a trusted adult in your circle, maybe clergy, if you have a church home and you have a referral to clergy who understand and can help with this issue, that's where you begin. And then as you grow stronger, you can be there for the person who finds out the news. And spend a great deal of time discerning whether to talk with your children about this or not. You can, again, seek advice, trusted counselor, clergy, someone who knows you well and who would be great if they know the child as well. There's not always a compelling reason to share it. Third, think about your motives. Parents need to make sure that they're acting in the best interest of their children rather than seeking to resolve issues in their own lives. Again, think about your child's level of maturity and ability to handle such information. You know, there are ways to talk about kids about the pro-life issue, about the reality of abortion that children can grasp at an age-appropriate level pretty young. Who Broke the Baby is a famous title by Jean Garten, and it was uttered by a child who saw a picture of an abortion and said, "Who broke the baby?" I mean, it's pretty straightforward. If you give a child facts, the child will be able to grasp it, and will be able to grasp the right and wrong of it as well. So if the family is experiencing conflicts that might be worsened by learning about the abortion at a particular time, there's no need to bring that into an already troubled environment. Are they emotionally enough, mature enough to handle such information? Or would it be better to wait until they're older? If you choose to tell, be age appropriate in discussing past abortions with your children. Teens or young adults may be able to handle details that wouldn't be appropriate to share with young children about the relationship or the context. Reassure your children that you will always love and accept them no matter what. And, you know, the particular verbiage that we use in this part of the conversation, I think, is it's so important. And what I have learned, again, from Philip Ney, who wrote the book Deeply Damaged about the dynamic of what happens in the wake of abortion to us emotionally and spiritually. He advises against telling children, "We wanted you. You were a wanted child." Because rather than reassuring children, what can happen is if a child misbehaves, for example, if they're very young and sees that you are angry or in other way may feel rejected by you, suddenly if you're now not wanted, you can begin to feel very insecure and very unsafe. And so for that reason, they recommend using the phrase that "we welcomed you." It's a subtlety, but I think it's an important one. And again, it goes to the problem that I have with this sister apple, sister pig nonsense, which is telling a child, "Well, we wanted everything to be great for you, so we just did away with that other child." I don't know how a child could process that information and come out with any kind of a healthy emotional conclusion. So I think this is one of the reasons why it's so important to be careful about how we have these conversations. Have outside support in place a trusted counselor or pastor, knowledgeable family friend who can help the child process the information and serve as an additional means of support. You can say, you know, would you like to speak with, you know, Pastor Dan or whoever it is that you have in mind, and give the child that opportunity. They may hesitate to share things with you as a parent that they would still like to discuss with a trusted adult. You know, you've got to respect your child's right to grieve when they get this information, too. And they may reject you in the short term until they can get it processed. They may, you know, they may pull back and need a lot of space. Then you can assure them that they are free to express their feelings and take their time to work through them. Parents shouldn't try to place a burden of needing to forgive on their children or insist that they move on from the situation before they're ready. It's a lot for a child or even a young adult to process. Answer the questions as honestly and openly as you can. Give as much information as the child seems to be able to handle. Usually, you know, they'll stop asking questions when they've arrived at a point of feeling satisfied with the answers. And stress that it is a family-only issue, that the need for privacy is real. And then when your child you feel is ready, as a family, you can acknowledge and memorialize the child lost to abortion. And here's where, okay, we're not talking about referring to a lost child as a ghost. We're talking about doing something sacred. And we'll talk more about that next week when we continue also our conversation with Lisa Robertson from Duck Dynasty. If you've missed the first half of the program with the recorded interview, you can go to cradlemyheart.org. We'll have it posted as a podcast for you. Then you can download it and listen at your own schedule. And I really hope that you have a chance to visit our website at cradlemyheart.org. You'll find a link to our Facebook page where we have useful articles, good resources for you, and things to help us become healthy, healing, and safety after abortion, not appeasement and going with the flow. Thanks so much for listening. Remember, Jesus loves you and so do we. And we'll see you here next week here at Cradle My Heart Radio. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Cradle My Heart. For more information about this show, you can visit our Cradle My Heart program page on myfaithradio.com.